the long-awaited COVID vaccine arrives in central Illinois.
We have been praying for this day and preparing for this day for months.
That's State Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike. I'm Dana Vollmer, and this is WGLT's The Leadoff.
Support for The Leadoff on WGLT and WGLT.org comes from Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington, now offering nonstop flights to Detroit on Delta Airlines, connecting travelers to the world. Schedules and information at CIRA.com.
It's Tuesday, December 15th. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from WGLT Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Now, let's lead off with the first COVID-19 vaccine doses making their way to central Illinois. Ryan Denham has the story.
Governor J.B. Pritzker is expected to visit Peoria today as OSF Healthcare St. Francis Medical Center employees become the first in Illinois to receive the vaccine. A spokesperson for the governor says the vaccine will be administered to OSF workers in Peoria this morning at 11. The first shipment, 48,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine, arrived in Illinois yesterday. They're now being delivered to certain hospitals designated as pickup locations for local health departments, and more doses are expected later this week. Speaking yesterday, Pritzker praised the logistical effort to transport the vaccines, which must be kept at an ultra-cold temperature until just prior to being administered.
Once the packages are received by medical providers, they have only days to use the vaccines, which is why most hospitals have carefully planned their desired delivery schedules over the next several days.
Sandy Salverson is the vice president of pharmacy for OSF in Peoria.
And that's our goal. And our objective is to make sure that we're good stewards of the resource and make sure that we can get as many of our mission partners protected as we can.
Frontline healthcare workers will get priority in the beginning of vaccine distribution, followed by staff and residents of long-term care facilities.
We know that the doses are going to be scarce. There's not going to be enough doses to vaccinate any one hospital's volume of healthcare workers. That's not unique to OSF. That's unique to just how the distribution is going to work. So we are working on how do you prioritize who goes first.
Salverson says hospital employees who have direct or indirect exposure to COVID patients are at the top of the list. That includes doctors and nurses, as well as staff that clean hospital rooms and handle waste. It's unclear exactly when the first doses will be administered in McLean County. I'm Ryan Denham.
Here are some other stories we're following in the WGLT newsroom. McLean County hit the 10,000 mark for COVID-19 cases yesterday, 9 months into the pandemic. The county's testing positivity rate ticked up to 9.3%, above the state average. The majority of Bloomington City Council members want the city to consider joining the National Welcoming America Initiative, but critics say they prefer the Welcoming Cities proposal, which they say takes stronger action to limit law enforcement's interaction with federal immigration authorities. And seven candidates filed to run for school board in Bloomington Normal's two public school systems, District 87 and Unit 5. Other candidates have one more week before the filing deadline. Find more on these stories at WGLT.org. Data from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign show that undergraduate students represent the vast majority of COVID cases that occurred during the in-person fall semester. And about a third of cases among undergraduates occurred in private certified housing, which include Greek houses and other privately owned residences. IPR's Lee Gaines spoke with Brian Moline about how the virus spread on campus this semester.
So between mid-August and the week before Thanksgiving, that comprises the in-person portion of the semester, about 80% of all cases occurred among undergrads. So of those cases, about a third were among undergraduate students living in private certified housing. So that includes Greek houses, even though they made up only about 13% of undergrads tested. So a rough calculation on the data provided by the university shows that overall, about 1 in 10 undergrads on campus tested positive this semester. But among students living in frats, sororities, and other certified housing, the rate appears significantly higher, about 1 in 3. So before we move on, I do need to include a caveat about this data. The university could only provide us the total number of students testing in each living situation at the beginning and end of the in-person semester. They say this is because students' living situations fluctuated. You know, some went home, some came back to campus between mid-August and late November. So when I say about 1 in 3 students living in Greek and other private certified housing tested positive for COVID, that's an estimate based on the number of those students getting tested at the beginning of the semester. So even though these are estimates, campus officials still acknowledge that students living in Greek houses and other private certified housing represent a disproportionate number of positive cases, and that's compared to students in other living circumstances.
Gotcha. What about those students in other circumstances, like those in dorms and off campus?
So 15% of all undergraduate infection, or about 483 cases, were among students living in university housing. So that's dorms. And about half of all undergrad cases occurred among those living off campus. But that's to be expected because they also made up about 65% of undergrads tested.
And what do campus officials have to say about why rates were so much higher among students in Greek and other certified housing?
So U of I spokeswoman Robin Kaler told me in an email that that's likely due to the fact that you're combining a congregate living setting with the social nature of these organizations. And I'm sure you remember that early on in the semester, there were some students hosting or attending parties while knowingly infected with COVID-19. And this caused several super spreader events that led to huge spike in cases earlier on. And it also led to campus having to implement some temporary restrictions on all non-essential activities.
And what do officials say they're going to do going forward to reduce COVID transmission among some of the groups where they saw the most spread?
Yeah, so I think it's first important to note that when students come back in January, we're going to be in the middle of this second wave of the pandemic. And there will likely be higher rates of community transmission than when they returned back to campus this past August. So officials say that they're working with some of their own social scientists now to better understand how students make decisions and understand their risk-taking behavior. They're also planning to refine the campus's testing, educational efforts, and other aspects of their response to COVID. The other big change for the spring semester is classes will be starting a week later than normal, but students are still being asked to arrive back on campus a week before classes start so that they can quarantine until they've received 2 negative tests. So the big takeaway here is that there is an expected spike that will occur, but campus officials are hopeful that they can clamp down on it before there's a major spread.
IPR's Lee Gaines co-reported this story with Christine Herman. Find the full breakdown of COVID cases on campus at illinoisnewsroom.org. Before we let you go, the Bloomington Liquor Commission meets today at 4. They'll hear complaints against Joe's Pub and Western Tap related to indoor service during COVID. That's it for today. Support for WGLT's The Leadoff comes from the Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington, now offering nonstop flights to Detroit on Delta Airlines, connecting travelers to the world. Schedules and information at CIRA.com.